I'm Barbara Lehman, and I work for the National Association of County and City Health Officials, NACHO. We're the nonprofit that represents local health departments. This is that time at APHA where everybody's getting kind of tired, and it's really nap time. And I appreciate so much that you're here. Thank you very much for being here. I'd like to have a good conversation today. We have wonderful presenters and interesting data, and the way this field is unfolding, we're all experts. We're all right out there at the cutting edge. So when you have thoughts and ideas, please, you know, go ahead and bring them forward, and let's just make this a conversation and dialogue about the state of public health in community health assessment, community health needs assessment, and community health improvement planning. I have nothing to disclose. Our objectives today are to describe the attributes of community health assessment, community health needs assessment, and improvement planning, discuss some of the variations in those efforts as they're going on around the country right now, and explain the importance of these data to local public health practice. We have fantastic presenters today. We have Julie Trocchio from the Catholic Hospital Association with lots of experience in hospital work. We have Dr. Paul Irwin from Tennessee here, and Dr. Irwin has a lot of experience in local public health practice in rural and urban Tennessee and international health. First, we're going to have a few definitions, and that's my granddaughter there. I don't know where she gets that critical eye from. However, she's asking some questions about, do we really need all these words? And unfortunately, Eleanor, the answer is yes. We have to talk about a lot of language right now that's kind of breaking out in the field. First of all, community health assessments, CHAAS, they have been around for quite a while. In the local health department world, you know, somewhere around 70% of local health departments report having done one in the past 5 years. And there are over 2,800 local health departments in this country, so that means that 2,000-plus local health departments have done a CHAAS fairly recently. So probably there is a CHAAS in a neighborhood near you. Community health needs assessment is actually in the Affordable Care Act language. That's what hospitals are required to do as part of their provision for continuing to have nonprofit status. Community health improvement plans. We have talked a lot about the definition of that at NACHO. Community health improvement plans involve thinking strategically about what you're going to do about what you find when you do assessments. And all these are necessary alphabet soup for today's conversation. So before we go any further, I like to size up who my audience is a little bit. I'm going to split this three ways. Can you tell me if you're local, state, or national? We're going to start with local first. How many people would say primarily that you work at the local level? Okay. And how about the state level? Okay. And how about the national level? All right. Well, thank you very much. We've got a nice split that way. And now I'm going to do a little question about your interest areas. First of all, I'm going to ask this question. How many of you use Healthy People 2020 in your work? Great. Okay. How many of you consider social determinants of health a part of your day job? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And how many, would you say that you're here primarily, if you're here primarily because you work on CHAAS, CHIPS, or CHNAs, would you please raise your hand? Okay. Can some of you who did not raise your hand throw out what you do just real quick? Thank you. So you're doing partnership work. Okay. Great. Okay. 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 Yes.
I'm on the regional health department. I'm not working on CHIPS.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Oh,
thank you. Okay. Okay.
I just think that people are sometimes in the
air. Right. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for being here, Steve. Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Please have a seat. There's some seats scattered around the room. Make yourself comfortable. I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet, and if you don't mind giving us your name, your organization, and if you don't mind, your email address. We'll be in touch later, and we also use these data to look at who our audience is at these sessions. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the profile. I'm going to do a lot of data discussion here. The profile study is NACHO's study of what local health departments are doing across the country. We use an estimate method that projects pretty accurate estimates for the country as a whole. Our response rate for the 2013 study was 80% of all health departments. And we included items on all three Public Health Accreditation Board prerequisites, CHAWS, CHIPS, and strategic planning. Plus, there was an item that was in the core, asked of all health departments, about whether you're collaborating with your local hospital. Now, just to back up a little bit on this, for accreditation, which is now voluntary, but local health departments, in order to be accredited, the process includes three prerequisites. That means they have to have already done a CHAW, already done a CHIP, and already done a strategic plan. So those three are primary pieces for accreditation work. For hospitals, doing a CHNA, a community health needs assessment, is now a requirement for retaining the nonprofit status. So this very pretty graph that the people on the profile team did for us, which I really appreciate. Come on in. There's some seats up front. If you go to the bottom row, you'll see the word CHAW. That's the community health assessments. And you'll see from this bar graph that 58% of all local health departments said they had done a CHAW in the past 3 years. Another 17%, no, I'm sorry, that's 12%, I don't have my glasses on, had done a CHAW in the past 5 years. So that's not my number that I started with, 70% had done one in the past 5 years, most of them in the last three. Now, CHIPS, you begin to see a decline. So for community health improvement plans, it brings this down to a little under half have done a community health improvement plan. This is a real tipping point that people are doing their CHAW work, they're doing their assessment work, and then they're not translating it into action. And this is part of where the field is right now, and this is where the important work needs to go on. And then in strategic planning, local health departments, this is their within agency strategic plan, you can see much lower. We're talking maybe around 4 out of 10, a little less than 4 out of 10 have actually done a strategic plan. We find these data pretty much across the board at NACHO that smaller health departments serving smaller populations, have lower activities in a lot of areas. And one of them is whether they've done these three accreditation prerequisites, the assessment, the implementation plan, and the strategic plan. So the LHDs serving the smaller jurisdictions are least likely to have done these, and LHDs serving the medium size seem to have the most luck, especially looking at the 2013 profile data. I've done another study with some colleagues looking at these data, and we found that if there was an epidemiologist present on the local staff, that the health department was much more likely to have done a community health assessment. And once we controlled for that, the size of the jurisdictional population washed right out. So this is turning out to be a really important capacity measure, is whether the local health department has an epidemiologist. Somebody was mentioning regional, whether your region has one that local health departments can share is a measure that we're looking into. So it really makes a difference, you know, if you have an epi around. This was a new question in the profile study, and we don't get to ask those very often, so this was very exciting that we got to ask this question. We asked local health departments whether they were collaborating with nonprofit hospitals on community health assessment. And what we found was that about half of them said, yes, I'm currently collaborating with my local hospital. And I was pleasantly surprised by that. Another 15% said, well, wait a minute, maybe I got my data wrong here. Yeah, it's another 15% said that they were discussing a future collaboration, and then the rest of them said that they were not currently engaged in discussion or collaboration, and 5% did not know. So we're looking here at over half are currently collaborating with the hospital on community health assessment. The question was very particular about that. So now we're going to look at a different database. This was data that my team collected this spring and this summer. And it was just a very interesting project, because what we did was we decided to look at CHAWS and CHIPS that were already posted somewhere online. So the way we started this, the way we conceptualized this was, well, we want some from each jurisdictional population category. So we would look within a population size, and we would look for posted community health assessments or community health improvement plans or community health needs assessments, one of those three, or hospital implementation plans. And we would look for those within a population category. So we ended up with a pretty good sample, not as good as it could have been, but a pretty good sample that covers all different population categories. And we asked several questions. We asked the intern to look for several different things about each of these posted CHAWS or CHIPS. And she looked carefully at what organization was leading the effort, whether it was a joint leadership or a sole organization. She looked also at how many partner organizations there were and what kinds of partners there were. We have a lot of detailed information about that. She got into it and discovered that there would be so many that she had to do it by type of partnership. For instance, you know, there could be 4, 5, 6, 10 faith-based organizations that were partnering. So that counted once to try to keep some control over our numbers here. So we have in these data that we're going to show today the number of types of partners. We looked at several interesting items. We've tried to be careful also about the geographic coverage of the CHA or the CHNA. So we have in our data exactly what service areas were covered. And some of those are, what was interesting what we found, there was a lot of multiple jurisdiction coverage. Oh yeah, and we used a survey. We sort of created a survey form for ourselves. That's how we entered the data. I recommend that if you're on a budget. It's a lot easier than setting up an Access database, and your data are all controlled and they come right back out to you just the way you created your form for them to be entered. So you have some control at the beginning. You can do a little pilot, make sure your little survey form works. It's really handy. These were our objectives. We wanted to find just what the general attributes were. We wanted to look at geographic distribution. and we wanted to look at the number of collaborating organizations, and we were interested in whether it was associated with a type of organization leading the effort. So our general findings, the first one, may be the most important thing we found, was the number of hours our interns spent looking for these things. I mean, they are not posted in a way that they are easy to find. And, you know, I know from experience that at the county level, you know, it's hard for that one county government employee to keep everything posted that needs to be posted for the entire county government. And that may be happening. Some of that may be happening. It just may be not enough capacity at the county level. There also, you know, it's just this continual problem that all of us face in our organizations, that where do you post something on your website? Where do you put it where people can find it? But, I mean, there was a lot of digging to find these. And it was the same way on the nonprofit hospital side. You couldn't go, like, to a hospital page and find the CHNA. It's just not out there clearly visible. And then again, you know, you start, well, you see it from the organizational perspective. You know, there are competing priorities for what gets posted up, but what bubbles up to the top. But I'd say that was one of our most interesting findings. We talk a lot about community engagement and community health assessment, but, you know, basically, if they can't find the CHA or the CHIP, there's a problem at a real basic level. So there was no standard nomenclature. There was no standard way these things were being done. There was no predicting how these things were going to look. And I can see that I didn't edit my language here. I think that was an early draft of my slide that I meant to say something nicer. But but just laying it out there, since I did, obviously. These things were boring. I mean, and the work itself is really not boring. The work is interesting. I mean, at the local level, what is happening in these areas is interesting stuff, and the partners have stories, and the partners have success stories, amazing success stories, once they start working on a particular item. But none of that is showing up in these reports. So that would be a big suggestion I would have, would be to put a story section in your CHAWs and in your CHIPs. Even stories about how your collaborations went are of interest to the community at large. You know, how something grows from 40 partners to 225 partners in 1 year, that's an amazing story, and that's what goes on once you start doing this work. We also found a good bit of geographic overlap. 502 reports for 776 population jurisdictions is what's in these data. So if four counties, for instance, did one CHA, it's showing up as one in this 502. Another detail was that we didn't find a specific planning framework. We found the one that NACHO uses, mentioned a good bit, but we didn't find a lot of others. And I don't know, that may have been a problem in how we collected the information. We may not have been looking for the right names of things. So that's something that we want to go back and look at more. But we looked for, well, what other names for people giving these, and we just weren't finding them. So it sort of shows the state of the art right now that there's not a lot of just standardized ways to do this work. So I'm gonna show you some of my data. These data, I can't imagine what this is like to try to report it out. Using interpreter, sign language interpreter, must be fun. They were fun for me, I'll tell you that. So within the type of report, we have three different categories here. We have the community health needs assessment reports, we have the community health assessment reports, and the community health improvement plans. Okay, so within those, the CHNAs, I looked at whether they were using healthy people or not. And among the CHNAs, 43% used healthy people. Among the CHAWs, 54% used healthy people. And among the CHIPs, 54% used healthy people. Now, one thing I don't go into in these slides is that this is any use of healthy people. If somebody put in a footnote that this was different from the healthy people goal on health services access, then that was enough for it to count as use of healthy people. We did not find what I would consider to be a lot of significant use of healthy people. I think we were looking at 20 to 25% were using it in goal setting, and only 5% used the leading health indicators, which is like the best thing about healthy people, and people haven't discovered it. So that's something that I think needs, that the field needs to be thinking about the potential of healthy people to help in this kind of work. I'll just go ahead while I'm here and say that also, you know, healthy people has great evidence-based practices. I mean, they've got them associated with each of their 42 topic areas. And you can go in there under each topic area and look at what the evidence-based practices are. And those can all fold into your community health improvement plan, but we did not find evidence that that was happening. Healthy people has gone from, in 2010, it was all paper-based. In 2020, you know, it's all web-based. So I think some is just the catch-up of the field to, oh, my gosh, look at all this information that's here. Leadership, this is just what our data showed. And this is, again, just of our sample. So whether this represents the whole of what it looks like right now, I have no idea. But in our sample, 33% were health department-led, about a fourth were coalition-led, and almost 40% were hospital-led. One interesting thing is that the leadership by population category showed that a lot of the really small jurisdictions were actually led, their CHAWs were led by hospitals. And I was surprised by that because there's local health departments in a lot of small jurisdictions in this country, but I think they are very under-resourced right now and understaffed. Potentially that's what's going on. I'm not sure. At any rate, what we saw in our data, and again, this may not represent the whole, but what we saw was hospitals out there in a lot of small communities doing their CHAW CHIP work. There was a lot of partnering going on. Although you can look at that first number, that 34%, and say there was a lot not going on too. So we got a third of these that were not, they had no partners. They had the one organization. Then after that, it starts, you know, you see 2 to 5 partners. And remember that these are types of partners. So 10 churches counts as one type. 2 to 5 represent 27% of the sample. 6 to 9 represented 16% of the sample. And then 10 and over, you know, represents that last 25%. But we had some with 25 or more types of partners. So, you know, once you start down this path, there are many types of partners. Now, even in a small area, you know, there are still many types of partners. So there may not be as many within a category, but there are still many types of partners in small communities, potentially. The collaborative work, what we found was that within the CHNAs, there almost 60% had one or more partnering organizations. Within the CHAWs, 70% had one or more, well, almost 70% had one or more partnering organizations. And within the CHIPs, 80% had one or more partnering organizations. I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to go back and take a closer look at these data and maybe recategorize a little bit. So when you see a publication, it may look a little different from this. But what I'm thinking is that once you get to implementation planning, you pretty much have to have partners at the table. Otherwise, you know, what are you as one organization against all these problems actually going to do about it? So I'm hopeful that it reflects the reality that to really see change, especially change that involves the social determinants of health, you know, any upstream work, you really have to partner. And Julie. Oh, and what, maybe I should ask before I go on, are there any like burning questions before about my data? Okay.
Thanks, Barbara. This is such interesting work. I do not have any conflict to report to you, but I do have something that Boston is my hometown, and something we would just never do in Boston, and that is to share some dirty laundry. But I'm going to, because I'd like to think we're all friends here. But to do that, let me start with a little bit of history about the hospital requirement to do community health needs assessment. And it really started with the development of the Affordable Care Act. And there were some people in Congress, legislators as well as some staff people, who said, well, if everyone's going to be insured, we won't have any need for charity care, and therefore, why do we need not-for-profit or tax-exempt hospitals? Maybe we just should do away with the tax exemption of hospitals. Well, luckily, cooler heads prevailed, mostly because of the realization that the Affordable Care Act is going to enroll so many more people in the Medicaid program and through the new exchanges than we had before, but certainly not everyone, and there will still be a great number of people who will remain uninsured, and there still will be that need. So the conversation then went to, well, how will we know if a hospital deserves to be tax exempt? And here leading the discussion was Senator Grassley from Iowa. Anyone here from Iowa? Senator Grassley is just, he's a wonderful legislator. He's very conscientious. He's really, really smart. But he's a farmer from Iowa, and he's full of practical common sense. And he says, I need to know who should be, and at this time he was had been chair of the Senate Finance Committee, which is responsible for tax exemption and collecting taxes. And he said, how will we know if a hospital deserves tax exemption? Well, I know, he said, not me, let's require a certain percentage of the hospital's revenues to be devoted to charity care, to care of low-income people. He said that would make sense to me. We'll have this bright line, either you do or you don't pass this test. Well, the hospital community was not very happy with that test because our concern was that how much you spend on community benefits probably wasn't the right question to ask, and also that there is so much more to the community benefits we provide other than charity care, although financial assistance to low-income people is still very important, but community health improvement, subsidizing services, medical education, research, those other community benefit services, they were important as well. So then the conversation turned to, well, how would we know if a hospital deserved tax exemption? And it was at that time that the discussion got around to, well, if a hospital could demonstrate that it knew what the needs of its community were, that it was working with public health and others in the community, and that it told the public what it was going to do about the needs that it uncovered, then you would have some documentation that deserved tax exemption. And so that was how this provision got added to the Affordable Care Act, a provision that hospitals must at least every 3 years do a community health needs assessment. And built right into the law is that we must work with public health. We must use public health expertise is the way it's phrased. We must gain information from persons who have broad knowledge of the community. And I think it's just brilliant, the people who wrote this requirement, is it must have the approval of the board of the hospital. So it really put community benefit and community health needs assessment, which maybe in the past, as Barbara was saying, these have been done for a long time in many organizations, but often it was sort of a basement activity. There was somebody, often in our case, in Catholic Health, often a nun sitting in the basement by herself doing these assessments, brought her out of the basement and into the boardroom, which we just thought was terrific. We just thought that was great. So then Congress turned all of this over, this new requirement that we must do community health needs assessments. Oh, and implementation strategies. That's a term Barbara didn't mention that just adds to the IS, which adds to the alphabet soup. But we must do an implementation strategy and say what we're going to do about needs that we've uncovered. And if there are needs we're not going to do anything about, why aren't we going to do something about it? Built right into the law. Well, then it was turned over to the Internal Revenue Service because it was a requirement for tax exemption. Well, this is the part where we get into some of the kind of dirty laundry. All of the national public health organizations wrote to the IRS and said, you probably don't know much about community health needs assessments. And it was true. These are tax lawyers developing these rules, and they'd never heard of CHIPS or CHAS or any of these things before. It was all new to them. And the public health organizations together said, this is how we think you should write regulations. This is who should be qualified to do a needs assessment. And they had educational credentials and experience credentials. These are the steps. This is how a needs assessment should take place. And this is when hospitals should have to contact local and state and other kinds of health departments. Well, it's at that point that hospitals said, that seems overly prescriptive to us. To us, it seems that communities vary, hospitals vary, health departments vary, and that description won't work everywhere. It'll work some places, it's probably going to work great, but not everywhere. So you probably recall a couple of years ago when they had the beer summit, because that was the professor here in Cambridge and the police officer had a little scuffle. Well, we had a chocolate chip cookie summit where we brought some chocolate chip cookies in and some hospital people, and Dr. Georges Benjamin came, and the head of NACHO came, and the head of ASTO came. We all talked together about, okay, we have public health thinking this, and we have hospitals thinking that. How can we get on common ground? And what we decided to do was to take an educational approach. That they went forward with their comments to IRS, as we put our comments, but we said, can't we work together? What are some good models that together, coming from the various public health organizations and coming from the hospital organizations, here are some models we recommend. Here are some tools we recommend. Here is the best knowledge that we've got. One of the tools, Steve Martin's here from ACHI, the ACHI toolkit on community health needs assessment has been available, I'm going to say, about 4 or 5 years, and it keeps getting updated, and it's just a wonderful tool that hospitals are using. And others use as well. So we decided that together we would work to try to educate the field so that a single message was going to public health, that was going to hospitals, on here are some recommended practices. And I think what you see, the results, are what Barbara was describing, which was a lot of collaboration and a lot of using public health tools. And I think it's a good thing, because the Internal Revenue Service still hasn't issued its final rules. So that educational approach, I think, was just exactly the right thing to do. When I look at the results, and I've shared them with my colleagues, and we find it very interesting, and we also are looking at community health needs assessments, we were really pleased to see the use of public health resources, including Healthy People 2020. Now, it might come as a surprise to you that we were pleasantly surprised, but and it's really been fairly recently that hospital community benefit people, and we've been providing community benefit programs and services for a long time, really had access and knowledge about those tools of public health. I would say 5, 6, 7 years ago, a typical hospital community health needs assessment involved making up a survey. Those of you in public health probably would just be appalled at that. They were using tools that weren't evidence-based. They were making up the questions as they went along. They weren't able to measure trends over time. And that was one thing that the public health people told us when we were giving out suggestions and recommendations to hospitals. use tools and use secondary data that's out there, that's reliable, that's valid. So use that. Don't spend your time and resources. It can be very expensive to develop a community survey, and to develop it and then conduct it. So the use of existing public health tools, I think, is excellent. The collaborative approach is just great. We were so pleased to see, and I think it was really almost two-thirds that either are working in collaboration or are thinking about working in collaboration. And that certainly would not have been true a number of years ago, so we were really pleased. Just some other things that Barbara mentioned. One of the things that's hard to find, the hospital community health needs assessment. One of the reasons might be in timing. Because of the timing of the Affordable Care Act, many hospital community health needs assessments needed to be posted really right about now. It depends on when the tax year ends of the hospital, so it's a little complicated. The other sort of problematic area is that IRS proposed rules say that the needs assessment and the implementation strategy, that's our plan for what we're going to do, have to be published within the same tax year. And so some hospitals delayed, they might have done their community health needs assessment, didn't publish it. And this is what the Internal Revenue suggested, IRS staff suggested we do, is hold on to it until you're ready to be in that same tax year. So that timing is difficult. Now, IRS did clarify when they came out with proposed rules that a hospital can post a draft so that it's available to the community, because we wanted it to be available as soon as it had been developed, so that would help. Another issue, she said, is that they're boring. Some of them are really long. I wonder if some consultants out there might have been paid by the word, because we do, or page, because some of them will go on for hundreds of pages. It was not clear to a lot of hospital people that summaries were permissible. I think summaries ought to be mandatory, that as long as we touch all the things that are required in the Act and in Internal Revenue Service rules that are coming out. And there are some key points that we don't need pages and pages of charts that I think the general public and certainly our boards probably don't understand. So I think that that's another issue that we've got. Working with the community health needs assessment requirement and the requirement that we do implementation strategies, which are community health improvement plans from the public health side, I think has changed, and other aspects of the Affordable Care Act really is changing the way hospitals operate and the way hospitals think. We are moving away from only looking at acute care, and that is taking care of people who are injured, who need surgery, who for OB care, to looking at the full course of the illness in the community. I think another aspect of the Affordable Care Act that's driven that is that hospitals are now penalized if they have more than expected rehospitalizations. And one thing that has done is made a lot of hospitals realize community matters. Where that patient goes after they're discharged, what services are available, what connections are made, really does matter. And it's interesting to see that some of the people responsible for patient transitions and some of the other delivery reforms are looking to the community benefit people in their organizations and saying looking at community health needs assessment and plans to say, how can we incorporate some of our findings into your findings? We are finding a number of hospitals moving from just looking at individual patients, which of course is what hospitals do, they treat people one at a time, to an increasingly larger number of hospitals are looking at health of the population. I think other aspects of the Affordable Care Act are also helping us do that. Accountable care organizations, some of the bundling demonstrations, and some of the other things. But certainly our experience with community health needs assessments and working with public health is driving that. And it will probably vary. Not all hospitals are looking at population health, but a lot of boards are looking at it that they never did before. We're moving from independence to collaboration. Hospitals, I think, used to work very independently. The idea to work collaboratively with health departments, with United Way, with other organizations, was happening to various degrees. But I think that the requirements and that it's built right into the law that we must work with public health and we must work with organizations with a broad knowledge of the community, and then the proposed rules that IRS has had, which there's just collaboration all over them, is that that really is helping that happening. We're moving from competition to cooperation, not always, but one of the interesting and I think the happy things, in addition to that hospitals are working with health departments, is that hospitals are working together. And where we've seen real very strong competition in a community between maybe two hospitals or three hospitals, we're finding that the one area they can work together is community health needs assessment. And in most communities, we're finding hospitals working together. And that just would be unheard of a number of years ago. So that kind of cooperation. Now, it's not everywhere that we're finding that. There's still some competition, and I think right here in Boston you see it. But I think that's probably a factor of there being so many academic medical institutions, and I think that Harvard does what Harvard does and Tufts does what Tufts doesn't. Though I did hear that there's that little area called Fenway Park Neighborhood Association, and it sends representatives to maybe five different community health needs assessments here in Boston, so which probably isn't how they thought they would be spending their time. But we are seeing a lot more cooperation among hospitals. And hospitals are getting back to their roots of responding to community health needs. All nonprofit hospitals were started because there were health needs in a community. They didn't get started because there's economic opportunity. We're lucky at CHA, at the Catholic Health Association, because our stories of how we got started are really dramatic. They often involve nuns who crossed the ocean, and then they crossed the country, and sometimes in wagon trains, and they were either attacked or proposed to along the way. We just have wonderful stories. But I urge you to look at how your local hospital got started, because it's always the same. It's civic or religious people getting together and saying, we need health care in this community, and that's how they got started. So that's a real bonus from this. When we look at what we should be doing in the future, we hope that we will look at monitoring trends in those relationships, see how they're going. We want to know the quality of those relationships as they go forward. I think we want to look at successful models and promote them. I think one of Barbara's findings that they had MAP mentioned, but not other models, is that a lot of hospitals, I don't think necessarily think to say, I used the ACHI toolkit or that I used another tool. But I think we're going to start asking that question, what tools did they use? But I think we want to develop successful models and promote them. I think we also want to keep promoting those tools of public health. I think hospitals are hooked on that. I think we're starting to see both accessing the tools, tools from public health, but also a relationship between hospitals and either local or even national schools or programs of public health. I think of Texas A&M School of Rural Public Health consults to a number of rural hospitals throughout the country. But a lot of our hospitals, when they're doing their needs assessments, are talking to schools of public health, programs of public health, and that has been a wonderful, wonderful new marriage. In the future, we're now moving away from health, community health needs assessments, and into the planning. And I think this is where it starts to get really interesting, to see what are those priorities and what are we going to do about them. we're starting to look at some of the analysis, and what we're finding is obesity, 9 out of 10 assessments are finding that. Mental health, almost as many unmet needs in terms of mental health, dental health, certainly access, and asthma. No surprises probably to you, but what are people doing about it? So I think this will be really interesting to see what we do about about those plans. In terms of local and hospital collaborations in the future, I think it's important for policymakers, and we want to make sure that those folks who develop the Affordable Care Act, those legislators and those staff members realize, and that the Internal Revenue Service realize, it's working. We are having health departments and hospitals working together. We are having hospitals working together, that all those incentives that have been built into the law and the proposed regulations, we're still waiting for final, that they are working. I think we need to look at the quality of the collaborations and find out what makes them work. In my organization, another area we're very concerned about is palliative care. I think there's some sessions here on palliative care. And it used to be that our goal was, let's make sure all hospitals have palliative care programs. And we've really changed to, let's make sure all hospitals have quality, high standards in their palliative care program. It's great that we have these collaborations. I think we want to look at the quality of the collaborations and what makes for good collaboration. So I think we just have fertile territory. I think we have to make sure that it's worth all that effort. That certainly is a very intensive work to involve sometimes over 100 different community organizations. And let's look at what that return on investment is. Is it worth doing all that work? And then finally, I think the biggest lesson that we've learned is that it just started a beautiful relationship between hospitals and public health. It was starting maybe a little bit before the Affordable Care Act, but it really, the Affordable Care Act and these requirements for community health needs assessment really started a beautiful friendship. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Paul, and then after that, we can answer some questions.
Thanks, Julie, and thanks, Barbara, and good afternoon to all of you. I don't know about you, but sitting here and watching has been a great experience for me, because if you will notice that many of the signs are actually very apparent if you watch the signs and listen to the words. And I wonder if you would show us again what community health assessment. Community health assessment. Okay.
Community health assessment.
Yes. And community health improvement.
Community health improvement.
Yeah. So improvement. And I think so many of these signs tell us something about how we communicate. Watching Julie gesticulate and watching the sign interpreter use her signs, many of those were of the same. And I found that fascinating. Not horseplay, okay? I became fascinated with sign language when I was assigned to work with Boy Scouts one summer after my freshman year in college. And you can imagine that 13 and 14-year-old Boy Scouts who need to use sign language can have some very creative signs, most of which I can't reproduce here, or shouldn't. Before I, let's see, I have no disclosures. Before I sort of highlight some key topics from what I saw from the data that Barbara presented, I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, although I am in an academic setting now, as Barbara mentioned, my past is really rooted in many years of work in local and regional health departments, working as a regional director for a region of 15 county health departments in East Tennessee before I crossed over to the dark side of academia. But in that time, and so we're talking about mainly through the early 90s and to the mid-90s and to the 2000s, I saw personally and professionally an evolution in terms of the types of tools that were available for local and regional and state health departments to use in community health assessment. How many have used Apex PH? That'll date you. Okay, yeah. Those of us with more gray in the mustache than color. So APEX PH, which actually is still a wonderful tool, Assessment Protocol for Excellence in Public Health, is actually still, I think, available on the NACHO website. An early NACHO tool, early in 1990s, that provided two main components. It had a piece that focused on the internal strategic planning, although that wasn't the exact term that was used, so again, sort of predating itself for accreditation, or preempting, if you will. But the other piece was a community health assessment piece, a very nicely structured, easy-to-follow format for conducting a community health assessment. Still, I think, a wonderful tool. There's PATCH that was available through CDC and others that continue to be used through the 90s. But then along about 1998, 1999, we saw the development of MAP, Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships. And I was fortunate to serve on the original MAP work group that developed MAP and the local tool for the performance standards assessment. And I don't think that we could have imagined in the year 2000, 2001, that we fast forward to 2013, and of the 50% of local health departments that have done a community health assessment in the last 3 to 5 years, almost half of them have used MAP in some form. And that's pretty remarkable. About 2 years ago, NACHO established a work group to focus on community health assessments and community health improvement processes, the CHA-CHIP demonstration project that involved 12 demonstration sites across the country. These were local or multi-district health departments that were using this as an opportunity to develop model community health assessments and community health improvement plans as prerequisites for the accreditation process. Each of these 12 had to come up with some site-specific sort of additional projects or additional focus areas. Several of those, or one of the options for these demonstration sites, was actually to choose to partner with a hospital in conducting a community health assessment. Another was to partner with an academic institution. And there were some other options, and a few of the demonstration sites actually had multiple partners. Those resources are that process, the demonstration site project has completed, and all of those resources are posted on the NACHO website. It's a little bit hard to find some of those materials, but if you'll make your way through the infrastructure community health assessment menu on the NACHO website, you'll find those materials incredibly useful for lessons learned in terms of conducting a community health assessment with a hospital, with an academic institution, or in whatever format. So a lot of great tools and resources, good stories, and hopefully not boring, that are available to all of you, and particularly those of you who are in local and regional state public health. So what are my take-home messages from looking at the data that Barbara presented and having the opportunity also to look at some additional data that she didn't present? Well, the first thing that jumps out at me, and I, as part of my sort of academic hat, I've looked at profile data across many profiles and trying to look at trends, look at changes over time. Local health departments are increasingly involved in completing, conducting community health assessments and community health improvement processes. If you start with even going back to the 93 profile of the 97, 2005, 2008, 2010, you can see a steady trend line across that time. And I think that is fantastic that you're seeing this. But the thing that really stood out to me when I looked at these data are that there's a narrowing of differences now between what the big guys are doing and what the small ones are doing. You saw the slide that Barbara showed, and she made further comments on this, that certainly we all know that the larger jurisdiction you serve, the larger health department you have, more than likely the more resources you have, and you have an epidemiologist. You may even have a community health planner who has a PhD in planning. And the smaller health departments that have a staff of 10 don't have that. You all know that. What we're seeing, though, is a real narrowing in terms of who's doing what. And the narrowing isn't because the big guys are not doing it anymore. It's narrowing because the small jurisdictions are increasingly doing and are showing that they're capable of doing community health assessments, even using a very complicated tool such as MAP. What I find additionally remarkable about this, I can say that word, is that these changes actually have really taken place since the 2008 profile and what's happened in that intervening time. You know, what we have all heard, that over half of local health departments nationwide have lost staff, have had to cut programs. So despite that, the smaller jurisdictions are achieving, and I think that's a real great thing to celebrate. Again, as is mentioned here on the slide, the use of formal recognized tools has been increasing. When I was in local health in the late 1990s in Tennessee, we developed a homegrown process known as community diagnosis, so a homegrown community health assessment and planning process. It's not that there's nothing wrong with developing your own, but there are a lot of good tools, validated and tested tools that are out there, and increasingly I think more and more local and state health departments are using formal recognized tools to do community health assessments. And then finally, marvel of marvels, but this is actually good to show, is that increasingly we're seeing that once the community health assessment is done, once it's completed, that it's actually used for developing an improvement process and an improvement plan that's implemented. We haven't always seen that. Unfortunately, too often, those two things get somehow completely separated. An assessment gets completed, and then you're asked to do community strategic planning, and what one ends up with in a strategic plan has no bearing whatsoever or relevance whatsoever with the community health assessment. Well, we're getting better with that. So here's the data that show that. So if you look at the 2005, 2010, and 2013 profiles, the blue bar shows the CHIPS, the community health improvement processes or improvement plans based on the community health assessments. So now in 2013, we're 93% of those who do a community health improvement plan or improvement process are actually based on the health assessment. That's a great thing. Also, that the local community health assessment has a connection to the state improvement plan. We're seeing that increasingly as well. And I think that that's something to celebrate. Although the percentages look like they're declining there, when you actually look at the number, the actual raw numbers are showing increases. Now, Julie had some wonderful things to say about collaborations. And I want to echo the positive things that she said. But while not wanting to end on a sour note, I'm going to end on something that I found equally sort of startling in the data that Barbara presented from the study that she and her staff did, looking again at websites and the postings of community health assessments and improvement processes. So partnerships in conducting community health assessments. So if you look at the data for local health, for community health assessments where the lead organization was the local health department. These are the number of partners that the local health department that were identified in that community health assessment. Now, I want you to sort of step back for a minute here, because that one actually refers to the organization that's doing the community health assessment. Okay? So this means that almost 40% of local health departments that are the lead, when they're the lead organization, are flying solo. Do you get that? Almost 40% of the time when local health departments are doing community health assessments, they're flying solo. That's how do you do that? How do you do a community health assessment by yourself? What is, I think, the glass is half full, and the part that we drank was pretty good, is in that last set of bars, that when local health departments and hospitals collaborate, look at the number of partners then that suddenly are there. Huge number. There's a multiplier effect of the engagement between local health departments and hospitals in terms of the kinds of collaborations and the numbers of partners that are involved in doing community health planning and community health improvement processes. I think that's a strong message, a positive message, and something that I would encourage you to share with your local partners, your local friends, and use this as a springboard for encouraging further growth in the collaboration between health departments and particularly hospitals in doing community health assessments. Tremendous opportunity that local and state health departments have in front of them now, in terms of being that partner that has a skill set and that has a perspective in population health that hospitals, as Julie referred to, are looking for. And here's an opportunity. Here's our time, if you will, from local and state health departments to be able to make that contribution. So I'm going to stop there and turn it back to Barbara, and who will wind it up for us.
I want to begin by thanking both Paul and Julie. I thought their presentations were just wonderful, and how lucky we are to have both of them here today and their perspectives. Also, our funder for this work was the Department of Health and Human Services and the Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. So we really appreciate that funding to do this work. And my intern, who has gone on to do other work, but her time at NACHO was just wonderful, Natasha Pillow, and she was just a great asset on this project. I think we need to take questions and comments from you all. Yes, go ahead.
There is no hospital. There's four hospitals, but none of them are in my community. I can check. You can make it six, make it three, make it four. So Hospital A is working with the big city that they're located in. They barely know we exist. Hospital B is working with the smaller city they're located in. They barely know we exist. That said, I'm not worried about that. We will have to do our own CHA, CHIP, ST, and now accreditation, because rumor on the street, as I picked up in the last 3 days, you can call it rumor, innuendo, supposition, is that, well, you better get accredited, and the state's not going to fund you, you're not going to be able to get a grant in the future for some competitive grant, hell will fall on you, even though you're doing 3,500 flu shots, and you got all kinds of chronic disease programs, and you're doing as good or better than most of the other health departments in the state. I like what you said about smaller is better and bigger is not necessarily better. You know, I went to a whole talk yesterday It is a bit overwhelming. It is a bit, and we have budget constraints. We got health entities around us that are cheaper because they don't do any of this. It's very, very interesting. And I will say that when I ran into my alma mater, I had a little party at Masters of Health School at Yale. I said, okay, send me some interns who could take us through this. Good interns. We got the money. We're doing good. Because I'm not going to hire a full-time employee, nor do I have the resources to give it to an existing employee who's working their tails off right now. Say, oh, go do these four things and take us right to accreditation. Because they'll probably walk out the door and say, forget about it. So I'm looking for resources. But I realize after being here for 3 days that I think I have to do it. Because I'm in the 50% that didn't do it. So thank you. Thank you very much.
I will comment that I'm so glad.
Paul, do you want to use the mic?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And Julie, too.
I'm so glad that you commented at the end that you made this connection with your alma mater and academia. This is one of the things, again, that came through with the work with the demonstration sites. And one of the messages that I want to convey very strongly is that you don't have to be in a community with a school of public health or even an accredited public health program. A community college that has a course in finance, that has a course in statistics. Very often, especially community colleges, which are more often community engaged than the bigger guys, they're looking for opportunities for their students to do service learning. And what better way than to engage those students in actually helping you to do some of the nitty-gritty work that you just don't have time to do? This is something that I think was a really strong message through these demonstration sites, that it doesn't take a Harvard School of Public Health to do this.
They might be able to do some data analysis. They may be able to talk about principles of health improvement. But and it's not their organization. They have no formal authority. And so sometimes, and I'm not suggesting you're saying this, but sometimes it means a perception like this, get in touch with the schools.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
Much. Much more than that.
It's more
than
that of students, and it takes time and commitment. And from the student's point of view, and from the school's point of view, the reason why this is a graduation requirement is because, first and foremost, it's a learning opportunity. And hopefully there are deliverables. But there are learning opportunities. And that's a real challenge for both sides. I just want to...
Thank you for that. I think that's very true. Yes. I think we need to be adding all the challenges that we see. So if you have a brief comment on this one or another one. Let's go with that. Start on this side.
Yeah. You go first.
Okay.
All right, so new challenge. Hi. I'm Joey Nichols, family medicine resident and rogue community health epidemiologist by night. I've been in this business as long as a lot of people, just about 7 years, because I read about this all in my spare time and just let it get down on. The reason is because I think that this is all about partnerships and collaboration. As a primary care doc who also wants to be in public health, what better way to be engaged with your community and going out and asking people, well, what do you want? And then going to the hospital and saying, well, what do you want and what are you willing to give up? And then going to the community partners and saying, how can we all work together on the stuff that's actually important to us? and you save yourself a whole lot of time trying to give people stuff they don't want by going out there and actually doing stuff they want, which is why it concerns me a little bit that there's a discrepancy in our feelings on primary data collection. Because if you look in the FAB guidelines, there's actually a stipulation that some element of primary data collection be involved. And if we're going to have partnerships, I think you have to have the health department either in the front seat or the back seat or on the roof of the car. I mean, they've got to be somewhere, in part of this process. They've got to fulfill that anyway. And I find it really difficult to imagine a process that doesn't engage your most important stakeholder, which is your patients. And that's a very fundamental way to engage them. You actually go out there and ask them what's going on in a way that they don't feel like they're involved if maybe somebody who represented them in the last census said something that's supposed to apply to them. I mean, they just don't get engaged in the same way. It doesn't have to be expensive. You can spend $1,000 or you can spend $100,000, and if you don't know how to do it, I'll give you my business card. I'm happy to help you. I'm wondering what are your thoughts on that moving forward, and how can we shift that emphasis? Because I like your hospice example. It's not so much whether you did it or not, it's how good it was.
Right.
And it doesn't even have to be really all that good as long as it gets the people in the neighborhood of your hospital or your community health department to think, hey, they care about me, and now they're going to tell me what they found, and then here's some ways that I can take action with my neighbors. You understand what I mean? So it's
right.
A dual participation.
Well, I definitely agree with you. I think I was a little glib when saying go to the secondary data. But what we've been telling hospitals is start with the secondary data. Start with county health rankings or indicator warehouse or some of those other reliable public health sources. Then look for gaps and fill them in with primary data collection. The ACHI toolkit has wonderful suggestions for community forums. One of the first places that we suggest people go is to emergency departments and talk to the physicians and nurses because they really are an indication of what's not working in the community, so who's coming in. But also with primary care physicians, with community organizations, and that can really only happen in person and small groups. So what I really meant to say was start with, find out all you can from existing data and then fill it in. Don't write your own survey. So I think that's a wonderful point.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Teresa from Rochester, New York. So there are other creative ways to find resources in order to get your CHI and CHIP done. I just wrote ours in June. We had our board approve it. But we collaborated among four hospitals. There were five, now four, in Monroe County, along with the health department, along with the Academic Medical Center, along with the Finger Lakes Planning Regency. We had the hospitals fund the process because they're so desperate to get help to do the CHI and the CHIP that they were more than willing to give us money for part of my salary, part of our finance salary, and meeting space, basically, to get the CHI and the CHIP done. And that's been going for 3 years. They've been funding it. So that's one creative way to do it, I guess. And it's not, I think the reason people don't use the map is because it takes 2 years to do. And there's other ways to do it that, you can kind of makeshift your way through needs assessment. It's just a matter of looking at the data and figuring out what your priorities are. And so it doesn't need to be as overwhelming and time-consuming, I think, as we make it out to be. It can be simplified, at least for the federal regulations for the IRS. Thank you so much for your work, because you saved me over the last 2 years with the Catholic Hospital Association, for sure. But the, I lost my train of thought. The IRS requirements, they don't really say much about the implementation plan. They say, do you have one? Yes. Are you budgeting for it? Yes or no. But they don't really detail what you need to do. And I'm wondering, in year two, three down the line, are they ever going to ask, did you fulfill what you said you were going to do? Because there's nothing in there now that even asks about that. Nor is there anything that I've found that says submit your assessment plan, which there's got to be somewhere that says submit the plan. It just says, do you have one? Did you have this and this and that? So I'm wondering if you can speak to that, how we are to assess the implementation of that strategy when there's nothing in there that requires IRS.
Well, thanks for mentioning our materials. I did want to mention we have a booklet. We have a larger book that we developed with some public health people, but also this is just the bare minimum of what the IRS requires. When it comes to implementation strategies, IRS, it's been an iterative process. First, they issued a notice of intent and said this is how we plan to to write regulations. There was very little, almost nothing about implementation strategies. But then in April, they issued proposed rules, and they got into a little bit more detail. Two things that I think are very important that they put in the proposed rule is that the hospital, when it said what those needs were that they were going to address, is how will you know, what indicators will you have that you've been successful? And the other is, what is your plan to evaluate? Which is going to push evaluation, which I don't think was necessarily done routinely. So those are two very important things. In terms of that implementation strategy being available, it has to be posted on our 990 form. That's the Form 990 Schedule H, which we have to file to the Internal Revenue Service. We say it's a good policy to put it right on your website, and we've encouraged our member hospitals, and I think HA has encouraged, and all the other organizations have encouraged their members to put it on their website as a good practice. But it does have to be attached to the 990, and at least eventually you can get it. There isn't that full loop, though. You're right. You said you were going to do this. We have to say, this is how we'll know if we did it or not, but that is a missing link.
I'll try to address some of it. It is a huge challenge, and I guess I would have perhaps a couple of thoughts about it. First of all, it's see it as a continuously iterative process. So you're not going once to the community to ask the community what are their concerns, and filling in your notebook and then going back and doing your number crunching and then coming out with your health assessment. But what you're doing is going back and forth between opinion and data, objective data, the numbers, opinion, key informant interviews, discussion, focus group discussions, et cetera, and being able to do it in a way that that you elevate the level of conversation. So the first conversation might simply be a clean slate where you're asking the question, what are your concerns and what are your hopes and desires? A second tier of conversations might be, When we look at the data, when we look at data about diseases and about deaths, this is what we find. What do you think about this? What's your interpretation of this? and reflect it back on what was brought up in the first conversation, so that it continuously evolves in a way that that allows you to produce a real synthetic process that in academia is called mixed methods, but I like the term synthesis better, where you're really synthesizing information from a number of different streams in that kind of iterative process. So that's one way that I would address that, that it's not a one-time conversation. And I'm going to take this opportunity to say, if I look like I'm running out of here and abruptly like running right past some of you, if you're trying to ask me a question, I've got a 5:15 flight to catch, so I might.
Thank you, Paul. I would say two things with your question, because you're absolutely right. We do need to find out what are the priorities of the community, and that's one of the criteria for setting priorities. But it's also important to set realistic expectations. Hospitals, I think, have been fearful from the beginning that they're seen only as deep pockets, and we have had some significant cuts, as is have some health departments. So setting realistic expectations of saying, we want to know what you think, we're not going to be able to do it all. But still, having said that, if we uncover significant needs, not just, and that means the group that's doing this assessment, we really have a moral obligation to do something about this information. That mental health, for example, is coming up over and over as a need. The hospital might not have a mental health program. There might not be necessarily a mental health program within the health department, but it really calls for somebody handing that over to someone and making sure that those needs are addressed somehow. So I think that there is, and what we're finding with our hospitals, we're saying, we're not dealing with asthma, but somebody else will. Or we have, there's a coalition that's going to start working on obesity. We're not going to deal with obesity, because I think we do have a moral responsibility to act somehow on that information. And Barbara.
I did want to add a comment to this one, too. I've seen this problem happen at the local level. I think it's something really always to pay attention to in community engagement. With hospitals, we have this huge opportunity to work upstream. Hospitals have some very powerful people in the community at their table. We have the opportunity, for instance, in mental health, to think about unemployment as a driver of depression, as a driver of all kinds of problems in your community, and people at the table, the Chamber of Commerce, that you could bring in to talk about employment opportunities that maybe the health department on its own couldn't swing. So I think it needs to be, there needs to be some immediate intervention so the community can see things happening, but also some things that are going to take longer that can really change the context in which people live. I know I've got a hand here that's been waiting. Lori, go ahead, and then here and here.
Actually, just clarifying, off of one of your comments about, I think there's a lot of misconception about MAP having to take 2 years, and so, because I've facilitated in MAP process in probably 12 communities and done it within a year in a very, very community engaged process. So it doesn't have to take 2 years. So that's one thing. Another thing I think that is really important in terms of addressing, some of the needs that I think the gentleman may have left. But there, beyond schools, there are a lot of organizations who have staff who are skilled in focus groups, or skilled in survey, or skilled in analysis, who want to be involved. So I really think the part where you're identifying, who are all the potential partners to do engage in this work, and analyzing what kind of skills and competencies do we need to get this done, and who has those. It may not be the traditional people that we always think of that can do that. So, I work similar through a public health institute, providing consultation, and do it through a capacity building approach like Lisa was describing, so that they don't always have to rely on a consultant, but we're building capacity of people to be able to do this on their own in the future.
Thank you.
Can I just comment on that for just a second? I think you raise such a good point about other partners. One of the things we did is sort of do a survey of who else has to do a community health needs assessment. Head Starts have to do needs assessments. Federally qualified health health centers, in order to get their funding, have to do it. Maternal and child health programs. It makes no sense for them to be done in silos. So find out who else is doing them in your community.
Yes, back here.
So I'm from California, where we've just had Senate Bill 697, and been doing community benefit partnerships for a long time. And one of the things that we've been noticing is that the reciprocity in terms of bringing hospital data into the community, which is so powerful. You mentioned it a little bit in terms of mental health. I'm just wondering if you've seen any examples of that reciprocity in terms of the hospital data advising and informing community partnerships.
One thing that surprised us was to find out that hospital community benefit programs were working on assessment, maybe with other community partners, and weren't necessarily involving their strategic planners. I'm sure that doesn't happen in your health departments. But you're right, there is phenomenal information that somebody else in another part of the building has, and we're seeing teams form that tries to incorporate that data. But that's a terrific point.
Going to be our last question.
It's a question and a comment. We're on our second iteration of the community health assessment. We did collaborate this time with the United Way, who's a huge partner. Everybody has a United Way, right? They have to do a needs assessment. And they do a very nice job. They do a survey. They put all the data together at the county level. So we partnered with the United Way and our nonprofit hospital. But now we're trying to figure out how to really collaborate. We have different timelines, different agendas perhaps. We already have a list of community health priorities. I'm looking for that place that does it just right. Where is it happening and being done well? We'd like to be very thoughtful about this. Luckily, we have a very good relationship with all the folks involved, but where is it happening in exactly the right way?
I'm wondering if anyone else wants to volunteer to say that they're really pleased the way it's going.
I have a community in Illinois, Will County.
I was about to say Will County is one of our poster children,
because
we have members both. Look too to California, because they have had that requirement for a while. I think San Francisco, from what I've heard, does a wonderful job. San Diego, and I'm sure our representative from California could tell you some other places where they've had experience. They probably learned through perhaps some issues along the way, but they're doing it right.
Well, New York has a wonderful prevention agenda website that has evidence-based interventions by sex, by pyramid, by everything, with references as well as 100 some indicators for improvement. So New York prevention agenda.
And we have lots of stories posted on our website. Last one.
Actually,
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.